Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday, August 9th, 2023, Hump Day here at Civic Media. Welcome you in on behalf of our producer, engineer, the wonderful, the talented Mr. Aaron Zommers, and our new producer in training. Well, not for this show, but for Civic Media in general, Nate. Who is in the house. There he is, waving. Welcome, Nate. We welcome you to the Civic Media world. And, of course, as always, on Wednesday, not just from beautiful Lake Wissota, but here, live and in color, the one, the only, Pat Kreitlow.
Love it.
Look at
just
that.
Love
Look
it.
At that.
Yeah. Thanks for having me here.
Yes.
But let's turn to the important matters.
What's that?
What the hell's wrong with you? You sound... Are you getting any better
well,
yet?
I said this as a joke on the air. You probably didn't hear. On Monday, I said, you know, Kreitlow had this about 2 weeks ago. And as it turns out, number one, he's very contagious. Number two, he's a terrible kisser.
No,
not at all.
You're welcome. Yeah, it does. And you asked me yesterday.
We didn't even see each other.
What can you do about it? What did I do? What did I take?
Yeah.
And I said nothing. Nothing worked. Nothing helped. Cough syrup, cough drops. It was just a lot of ibuprofen for the body aches. But as far as the voice, and as folks know, I completely lost my voice for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it just took time.
Well,
12 days.
Many people would wish I would lose my voice, I think. But I don't have the aches. I don't have the my throat is not sore at all. It's just the laryngitis and the stuffy head.
Welcome to Midday Radio, where two middle-aged men discuss their health ailments.
Pat, have you had your colonoscopy?
got my orthopedic shoes on.
Oh, thank goodness we have youth over in the booth across
youth
from us.
Youth in the booth. I youth, like that.
Yep, youth in the booth.
There's a new show.
Coming next on Civic Media, Youth in the Booth.
But first, cocktails you can make with Metamucil.
Dr. Wirely will be adding some ingredients there, right?
Yes, she
to
would.
To keep us regular.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Oh, God, please, let's move on to something else.
Yeah, it's great to have Pat. Of course, he is the host of the terrific Up North News every morning, 6 until 8, right here on the Civic Media Network, or radio network. And you were in town because we're both going to be south tomorrow in South Milwaukee, as a matter of fact, at the South Milwaukee High School. Tell folks what we're going down to do.
I don't know what you're doing there. It's funny. We actually did find out separately that we're going down there. Mine is much more of a long range project, and I'm putting it out there publicly, hopefully maybe to keep myself honest.
Yeah.
But I would like sometime in the coming months to do something for Up North News and talk about it here on Civic Media as well. And I'm over promising here, but essentially a Schoolhouse Rock type. Just a franchise, if you will, of, I don't know, could be 5 to 10 different little video segments that explain to people how schools are funded in Wisconsin because it is so Byzantine.
I love
it
that.
It is so crazy. And I thought, why doesn't somebody just finally try to explain this in plain English? Because I believe people then would understand the importance of funding our public schools and who's shortchanging our public schools. And so tomorrow sounded like a great opportunity to talk to some of the people who could help me break down the issues and create a good franchise in the coming months.
I think that is a fantastic idea. This is the first I've heard about this. That's awesome.
I'm hoping. So then as I said, well, I'll come down talking to people there. And they said, oh, and there's this great guy, Todd Albaugh. He's going to do his radio show from there. And I said, I know that guy. Change the locks.
Right, exactly.
No, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to be talking to people about these important topics.
They've asked me to come down and be on a panel because my maternal grandmother was the first woman to serve as a dean in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my whole family are pretty much educators. But I worked for former State Senator Dale Schultz, who in 1994 was the top target of Democrats because of what was called the qualified economic offer.
Oh, yes.
Fast forward to 2011, 2012, he became a legend because he was the only Republican senator to vote against the terrible Act 10 that dismantled public but most of public education in terms of being able to bargain and negotiate if you're a teacher.
Right, exactly. And to treat teachers like second-class citizens, which right. they would later do to, you know, all women in terms of their reproductive health care right. rights. It's just, and try to take voting rights away from people. Yeah. So it's always an ongoing battle to see, you know, who can they treat badly next? Who can yeah. they, you know, treat unfairly?
Yeah. So we're going to be doing the show, our show, live from this convention down in South Milwaukee. Mr. Kreitlow is going to be there, so he'll hop on our show for a bit. We'll talk public education and how it affects all parts of the state. Pat, you're from up there in Lake Wissota. I'm originally from Richland Center, Southwest Wisconsin, and we've talked about this before, but our small towns, in many cases, our school districts, and particularly our high schools, are the identity of these towns.
Very much so. And, you know, the folks who do that, you know, do the teaching, who are the coaches and everything else, they had been very well respected in the community. But, you know, a lot of those educators, they'd get out and talk to people during, say, election years, mm-hmm. and they'd say to us, they'd say, I did not know that that's, you know, that they thought so poorly of me. They'd come in and say all the right things in a parent-teacher conference, but when it came to actually supporting them, that's another matter. And it's something I think you and I and many other people are trying to turn around and raise that measure of respect for the people who are helping educate our kids.
Thank you, Mr. Kreitlow. Appreciate your viewpoints. Always appreciate you. We'll see you down in South Milwaukee tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
Thanks for stopping in. Stay tuned, folks. Coming up next, we have Stuart Stevens from the Lincoln Project, the author of this fine book called It Was All a Lie, How Republicans Became Donald Trump. He has a new book out. We'll talk about that. Also, what are his thoughts on the Wisconsin Republican debate coming up in a couple of weeks? And also in hour number two, then we'll talk to Matt Solomon of crack.com. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show. Thank you, Vanna Kreitlow. Back after this in the Civic Media Radio Network. Civic Media Radio Network. Let that play out a little bit. A little George Michael, our theme song there, a little Freedom. Don't let it play the whole song that often, but once in a while, you just got to remind ourselves the great lyrics there. Stuart Stevens is scheduled to be with us. We're still waiting to make contact with him. So while we wait for that, we're going to bring up a couple of these issues that we had planned to talk with Stephen anyway. And one of the ones that I want to bring up, there was a great article today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm just trying to bring it up here. It was on Republicans, state Republicans in Wisconsin, trying to go after votes on college campuses. So that's what we're going to be talking about in a minute. And I think we've established contact here with Mr. Stevens. Stuart, can you hear us? Probably say once again, let's try it one more time.
Can you hear me okay?
Now we can. Now we can. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you making the time for us today.
Thanks for asking me to the party, dude.
Hey, absolutely. I apologize to you and our listeners. I'm still struggling with a hoarse voice. I'm not sure what happened, but I it's not COVID. I don't feel bad. I've just lost my voice. I'm congested, so I apologize for that. Stuart is a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, as is our ongoing contributor, Trigvi Olson. And like to Trigvi and myself, a former longtime Republican, and we've all left the party for various reasons. Stuart is now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. He is an author, the author of this wonderful book, who is Stuart. I am on my second time of a read through. It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. And he has a brand new book coming out soon called The Conspiracy to End America. And we appreciate him joining us. Stuart, great to have you back with us.
Thanks, man. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about this new book coming out, because as I said, and this is great advice for anybody who was a Republican or is a Republican who's kind of like, what the heck is going on when you look at Trumpism? Pick up this book for the one you've already got. It Was All a Lie, because as a Republican or now a former Republican, it was cathartic. And you read this, what you've written, and you're like, oh my God, he's absolutely right. So that's a great book in and of itself. But tell us what this new book, The Conspiracy to End America, is all about and what inspired you to write it.
Yeah, the subtitle for the book is The Five Ways My Former Party is Driving Democracy to Autocracy. And, you know, the reason I wrote this, Todd, is because the more I read about how democracy slide into autocracy, and, you know, this is brilliant people have written a lot about this. This is not an obscure subject. I mean, you know, there's incredible people from Ruth Ben-Ghiat to Jen Mercer, the guys who wrote, two Harvard professors who wrote How Democracies Die, Timothy Snyder. I mean, there's this wonderful world of stuff that is not only interesting, but it's like fascinating to read because they're great writers and thinkers. Consistently, there are five elements that are in place when democracy slide into autocracy. So support of a major party, that's happening, certainly. Mm-hmm. Trumpism has become the Republican Party. Propagandist, I mean, God knows there's a whole world out there. I mean, Fox is just really the tip of the iceberg and by far not the worst.
Right.
You need financiers, which they have unlimited money. I mean, the Peter Thiels, whatever the world, the Leonard Leo, who ran the Federalist Society for a million years, just received last year the largest single donation in the history of American politics, $1.6 billion, which is largely going now to his efforts to change the legal structure of how we vote. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. You need a changing legal structure so that what you do then becomes illegal. I mean, becomes legal. So if Georgia passes a law, they can overturn the state, the popular vote. When they do it, it's perfectly legal. That's what all of this legislative theory of elections that was just tested in the Supreme Court, and we should talk about that. And you need shock troops, which Lord knows they have. So, you know, what occurred to me is that we look at all these things individually. I mean, there's a lot written about all of them, a lot, but we don't look at them collectively enough. And we don't look at the interaction between the two of them enough. And I think that, I mean, that's why I wrote this book. I, you know, struggle. I mean, I'm sure you struggle with this every day, and a lot of your listeners do. How do you talk about this without sounding alarmist?
Right.
Personally, I think it's like a pandemic. Whatever we say in the beginning is going to sound alarmist, but in the end, it's going to prove inadequate. So that's why I wrote it. And it's going to come out in October. People can pre-order it now if they want to. That would be great because the way our crazy book-selling world works now, pre-sales have become so important. I don't like writing these books. I hated writing It Was All a Lie.
Did you find it cathartic, though? As you wrote it, did you find it, or was it just not pleasant at all for you?
One of the guiding principles I had, if that's the right word, in writing It Was All a Lie, was not to blame others. You know, there's a whole trope of books people write about Washington, if only they had listened to me. I couldn't write so that true. Book. I couldn't write that book because they had listened to me.
Right.
I mean, I helped elect more of these people than anybody else in my end of the business, media consulting. I worked in five presidential campaigns. I helped elect Republican governors and senators in over half the country. So, and one of the things that drew me to the Republican Party, like a lot of us, was this concept of personal responsibility, which, of course, turned out to be a complete fraud for the party. But I believed in it. I'm sure you believed in it. So how do you begin to write about this and not accept personal responsibility? So the opening sentence in that book is basically blame me. I should have seen this. I was part of this. And the reason I wrote the book is because, you know, a lot of people are wrong about 2016, but it is really hard to find anybody who was more wrong than me. I didn't think he'd win the primary. I didn't think he'd win the general. And when he did, I started asking myself, like, how did this happen? Why didn't I see this? And I had a lot of friends, I'm sure you did too, that said, well, you know, Trump has hijacked the party. And I was like, man, I'd like to believe that. But how can you intellectually be honest and think that when he's overwhelmingly the most popular person in the party? The person who hijacks a plane is not popular with the passengers. They want to get him off. And
That's a
Trump
great
point. Is still so. I, in that old kind of high school English teacher way, that if you can't write it, you don't understand it. I really started not to write a book, but just to write to try to understand it.
But I think,
and
what,
you know, I
go ahead.
Yep.
No, go ahead.
Well, I came to a conclusion, and I read a lot about this. There's a lot of stuff I thought I knew about. That when I really started reading about it, I realized I had misimpressions or little bits and pieces, you know, because I was a guy that worked in campaigns.
Yeah.
I wasn't a government guy. I can make the case, you know, if I was charged with, say, Stuart Stevens, you represent the worst of the American political system. I'd say guilty. Right. I did. I was a campaign consultant that just wanted to win. And I was happy when I won and I was unhappy when I lost. I mean, it wasn't a very complicated, value system. And I came to the conclusion that really there were two strands of the Republican Party after World War II. An Eisenhower strand, sane, governing, boring, and a Joe McCarthy strand. Conspiratorial, xenophobic, often racist, non-governing. And for those of sort of my tribe that were associated with George Bush and compassionate conservatism, and I went down to Austin in April 1999 to work for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
I think we believed, I certainly believe, we saw the dark side. We probably played to the dark side too much, but campaigns do that a lot. That we were the dominant gene.
Yeah.
And that this other was a recessive gene. And it was inevitable that our side would emerge dominant, if only because of political necessity, because of the way the country was changing. And, you know, there's a group of us, we used to literally sit in the same room, like me, Nicole Wallace, Matthew Dowd, Mark McKinnon, you know, has a show, The Circus. Incredible writer, Michael Gerson, who sadly passed away last year, who was Bush's chief speechwriter and became an op-ed writer for The Washington Post. Peter Wainer. And we all thought the same thing. And we all came to the same conclusion about Bush, I mean, about Trump. And it wasn't like we got together and said, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was just so repugnant to what we thought we were.
Here's why I found interesting what you said. In 2016, I was similar in that as Trump kept going through the primary, I'm like, this guy's going to win. And I thought, this is fantastic, because there's no way that people like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and go right down, there's no way they're going to let this guy take over their party. The whole thing's going to implode. We're going to get rid of these right-wing goofballs, and it'll come back to some sort of center. That's how naive I was. I underestimated the thirst for power, and I should have remembered what, you know, Henry Kissinger said, politics is the ultimate aphrodisiac. I mean, these guys wanted a political hard-on. I mean, really.
You know, of those 15 people running against Trump, they all thought the same thing.
Yeah.
They thought, look, all you got to do is get one-on-one with Trump. Because, I mean, can we be serious people? The Republican Party is not going to nominate a guy that talks in public about having sex with his daughter.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
I mean, are we crazy?
Right. Right. No, it never happened.
A casino owner, you know, who is a maxed out donor to Anthony Weiner.
Right.
This isn't going to happen. And it did, of course. And I, in the June of 16, I went around to a few people. I promised to keep them secret, so I'll keep them. But
sure.
Prominent Republicans in key states, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Florida. You can pretty much guess who they were.
Yeah.
And I said to him, will you run as a favorite son? Because all you have to do is get 3 or 4%, you're going to block Donald Trump.
Right.
And they all said, look, Stuart, if we, the establishment, put our thumb on the scales, that's going to be why Trump lost. It's not going to be because of all these terrible ideas like you're saying. It's not going to be because of the alt-right. It's not going to be because of the racism. It's going to be because of us. Mm-hmm. We just have to lose and start over. And I would say, naturally, well, what if he doesn't lose? And they would say, he's not going to win.
Right.
And I probably wasn't very good at arguing the opposite, because I didn't think he was going to win. So, you know, there's this thing that was kind of out there in popular culture that anytime you talk about World War II, you've degraded a conversation, or, you know, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think that what has happened in America is an exact parallel of what has happened, what happened in Germany in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And one of the most memorable, prescient books that really stuck with me that I read for, it was all alive, was the memoirs of a guy named Franz von Papen. Franz von Papen was a Prussian aristocrat who really, in the 1930s, did more to usher Hitler into power than anyone else.
And we're going to hold it there for a second and pick it up on the other side. That is quite a tagline to pick up. Horace Stewart Stevens after this. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allbull Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby.
Welcome back to Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 1:33. Mr. Aaron Sommers, our producer and engineer with Nate in training, being smart there and cute. Stewart Stevens and I were talking over the break that my voice, this hoarseness, has given me a Barry White voice type of thing. But yeah, that's a horse. That's exactly what it is. I'm not nearly as successful as Mr. White, but we will press on. Stewart Stevens, he is the author of this great book called It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. His forthcoming book called The Conspiracy to End America, The Five Elements Pushing America, Democracy, that is, Towards Autocracy. You can order it, pre-order it, please, wherever books are sold. You left us with a cliffhanger, Stewart, talking about how this is not dissimilar to what happened in Europe prior to World War II, this kind of push towards autocracy. Give us the rest of that story, please.
Yeah, I think what has happened with Trumpism is directly analogous to what happened in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote It Was All a Lie, one of the pleasures of writing the book, depressing as the book was, it was a good excuse to read a lot of books that I've been interested in I'd never read.
Sure.
And one was a short book called The Memoirs of Franz von Papen. And Franz von Papen was a Prussian aristocrat who was more responsible, really, than anyone for ushering Hitler into power in the 30s. So he wrote his memoirs in 1953. Now, you could say between like 1939 and 1953, things had gone a little sideways, right? I mean, you know, World War II, 100 million people dead, the Holocaust. I mean, you know,
you got
like,
that.
All right, yeah. It didn't quite work out.
Right.
He still was justifying it. And his justification is almost verbatim. There are sentences in his book that literally are almost verbatim what Mitch McConnell has said, which is those of us, we thought we could control him. There was no doubt that he would adapt to us. We wouldn't have to adapt to him. And his justification, even in 1953, was, look, we, the aristocrats, mm-hmm. had lost touch with the working class. And the alternative was they were going to come Bolsheviks, which there's a lot of truth to that. Mm-hmm. There was a huge communist mm-hmm. movement in Germany. And Hitler was our way to communicate with them and stop the country from going Bolshevik. And that is really, at the bottom line, what the Republican establishment, of which, you know, I would have been a card-carrying member, has justified this. And what is just so fascinating is that at every turn when they have a chance to go away from Trump and Trumpism, they don't. They mm-hmm. flinch. Mm-hmm. Had they only voted to convict him, this wouldn't be happening now.
Yeah.
The party maybe could have moved on. Mitch McConnell won't even say Donald Trump's name.
Yeah.
I mean,
and still, you know, saying he's going to support him in 24 if he's the nominee.
I know. I find this just so deeply offensive. So, like, my dad was like hundreds of thousands of others, right?
Mm-hmm.
3 years fighting in the South Pacific, 28 island landings, came back, never talked about. That greatest generation, their sacrifice to defend democracy, compared to these people, to Mitch McConnell just saying Donald Trump's name.
Right.
For a United States senator, a Republican, a week after the November election, get your comm shop to put out a statement congratulating the president-elect of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how hard is that?
Right. Exactly.
You're not charging a machine gun nest. You're not like, you know, have to parachute into occupied France. It's your comm shop. And they can't even do that.
I want to get your take on something that's happened in Wisconsin here. But before that, I want to invite people, if you would like to ask Stuart Stevens a question or bring up a topic here as it relates to Trumpism, how the Republican Party has changed, your chance to ask someone who's actually run Republican campaigns, 844-967-2789.
You don't have to rub that in, Todd. Okay.
I was actually going to elevate it. I was not just Republican, but presidential campaigns. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Give us a call on the phone line, or you can text us on the Civic Media app. Here's someone. Let's see here. It says, this is Jeff from Shorewood. Does Stuart think that Drumpf, his word, not mine, is smart enough to have studied the autocratic tendencies of Europe in the late 30s to 50s? I don't think Donald Trump has any recollection.
I don't. but you know, I think one of the interesting questions to ask ourselves is, why did America not become fascist in the 30s when there was a huge fascist movement in America, and so much of that was happening in Europe and elsewhere? The conclusion I come to is probably because FDR was president, and if Lindbergh had been president or Henry Ford, we probably would have been.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us? To me, the lesson is what we used to learn when we studied civics still, that leadership matters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I worked for Mitt Romney. We lost, by the way, if you hadn't heard. but I asked myself a lot, what would have happened if Romney had won? Mm-hmm. He would have led the party in a very different direction. And it would have been the same party. Mm-hmm. So I think what Trump realized is, in his sort of animal instinct way to smell weakness, that the Republican Party establishment really didn't believe in anything. Mm-hmm. And if you would give them power, they would let you do, they would walk away from everything they said they believed in. And that's the deal they made.
And he was right. And he was right.
Yeah, you know, I can't tell you. I mean, for a long time, it's almost difficult for me to talk about this without being emotional. Mm-hmm. On a personal level, how painful it is to see these people, a lot of whom became friends that I helped elect, who I never in a million years would have thought they would do this. People I know they wouldn't let Donald Trump in their home.
Yeah.
And they're supporting Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartbreaking. But, you know, one of the lessons that people who are real historians and students of autocratic movements is they always say, listen to what they say because they mean it.
Yeah. Right.
And to me, the turning point was December, I think 15th in 2015, when Trump came out for a Muslim ban. Because, I mean, if the Republican Party stands for anything, it's the Constitution. Right. And a Muslim ban is a religious test. How do you know if somebody's a Muslim unless you ask them if they're a Muslim?
Right.
You know, I mean, I always thought like the old folk singer Cat Stevens who became a Muslim. What if he showed up at, you know, JFK and said, well, actually, I'm a Quaker now.
Right.
What were you going to do? Like ask him trivia questions about William Penn? Like, let's go through it here, dude. Like, you really, you know what I'm saying? And the party, what Reince Priebus should have done, he should have said, look, I'm chairman of the party. I can't stop Donald Trump from running. I can't stop anybody from voting for Donald Trump. But as long as I'm chairman of this party is not going to accept this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that means I shouldn't be chairman of the party, that's for the party to decide.
Right.
But they didn't. And I know why they didn't. They didn't think Trump would win. They were worried about him running as an independent. But, you know, one of the things the Republican Party used to say, or really two things, is one, used to accuse Democrats of having situational ethics,
mm-hmm.
which probably wasn't fair, but we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would adapt your ethics to a situation to suit you, which is exactly what the Republican Party has done here.
Yep.
And the other thing we used to say is don't negotiate with terrorists. And Donald Trump was a Democratic terrorist.
Yep.
And they negotiated with him. And this is where we are.
Let's go to the phone lines here. Stuart Stevens, a senior advisor at Lincoln Project, a former Republican operative, more than an operative, a senior guy who won a lot of elections. And what I love about, one of the many things I love about Stuart is he takes responsibility. In fact, the very first line in his book, It Was All a Lie, is, quote, I have no one to blame but myself. right there. That's a guy taking responsibility. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's stay here in Madison, WMDX. Joanne in Madison. Joanne, thanks for listening and calling in. What say you?
Yes. Great show. I have a question about comedy and the effects of comedy. I'm thinking Daily Show. I'm thinking Colbert. I'm thinking about the big comics in the past who could raise some questions. Jon Stewart could talk about Romney's magic underwear in a way that would be disarming and fun rather than just attacking somebody's religion. And I'm worried about the fact that we don't have that in this coming election at any time shortly. I mean, let's all hope that the writer's strike is resolved, but there's no comedy anymore to soften the blow of a lot of the events that are happening right now. So thank you, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Love it,
Joanne. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. I think it's fascinating. I think the intersection between popular culture and politics, I mean, I can remember when Bill Clinton ran and he played his saxophone on Arsenio Hall. Mm-hmm. And all of us Republicans said, this is beneath the presidency. This is going to kill him. And by the end of the campaign, George Bush would have like played the flute on the, you know, the pan hour. You know, would have done, you know, it would have come to like a strip club to play like, a walk-on music. You know, in the Lincoln Project that I work with, we use humor a lot, and it has been tremendously effective. And it's funny you should say this, because this morning I was on a call with Lincoln Project people, and we were doing what, you know, you do. You analyze, like, of the videos we're putting out, which ones are the most effective. And those who are humorous were by far the most effective.
Wow.
So, you know, who was it that said death is too serious, not to laugh at? Mm-hmm. In these moments, I think we need that. And I think it's incredibly effective. And, you know, one of the weird things about Donald Trump is, have you ever seen him laugh?
No. Not unless it's at someone.
Not as like a real laugh.
No, never.
Mm-mm. And I mean, that's just a sign of this kind of psychological brokenness of the guy, you know, that Mary Trump, his niece, writes about a lot.
But the current Republican Party they don't laugh at anything. I mean, they're void of any humor or self-deprecation. I mean, I remember Tommy Thompson used to laugh at himself all the time in Wisconsin.
That's right. Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, Ronald Reagan, right. I just watched something online the other day when he was giving a speech a few months after he recovered from getting shot and a balloon popped during a speech. And right like that, he goes, miss me. And kept on reading. Yeah, it was hilarious, you know.
I can remember, you know, campaigning with George Bush in 2000. We were in front of some large donor event, and he says, you know, it's good to be with you, that people call you fat cats and rich guys. Me, I just call you my base.
Let's get through a few more calls quickly here. Our phone lines are lighting up. We appreciate it. Let's go to Mark in the sack. Mark, what say you?
Yeah, it's I have made this point before that I smell the fascism that is coming out of Donald Trump's mouth, that it is something I was made aware of, you know, and I said before, I was made back more aware of it, like in fifth grade when fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Mackey, was talking about the showers and the death camps in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't think it was too young to hear about that, because she's probably talking, you know, contemporary memory from herself, probably seeing the pictures when she was back in school, you know, back in the, you know, the, yeah. And maybe hearing direct reports of people talking about it, you know, that coming back and telling her about it, perhaps some family members, from soldiers that she knew had come back from World War II. And I thought I heard something today and I just had missed a part of it, that is Scott Walker now discouraging teaching about the Holocaust now, downplaying that, and or that we shouldn't be talking about it in school at all, not teaching about it?
I haven't seen that yet today, Mark. I was getting ready for the show. I'm not sure. The short answer is I don't know.
Yeah, and I just wanted to clarify that, because it just is, it wouldn't surprise me. That's terrifying, is that an American politician, well, there's too many of them now, they're talking about, they don't want to talk about.
Mark, just kind of put you on hold just for a second. We're running out of time here. About 30 seconds, Stuart, just a reflection on that call.
Well, I mean, that's what Ron DeSantis is doing when he's banning teaching African-American AP courses.
Mm-hmm.
You have to rewrite history to be an autocrat. Mm-hmm. That's why Putin is trying to rewrite the history of Russia into this great epic empire. It's essential because reality doesn't jive with what you need, so you try to rearrange your reality.
Stay tuned. We've got Jack, Dick, and not Jane, but Gene on the phone lines. We'll try to get through you quickly. Stay tuned. Stuart Stevens from Lincoln Project is here. More with him after this. This is the Todd Lyball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Lyball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And it's now 10 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. Glad to have you along with Mr. Zombers, our producer engineer, and our fine guest this hour, Stuart Stevens. He is a former Republican like myself, now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, and talking about his forthcoming book called The Conspiracy to End America, The Five Elements Pushing Democracy to Autocracy. You can pre-order the book at Amazon or your favorite local bookstore. Mr. Zomers will put the information up on our show page, and you can find it there as well. Going to try to get through as many calls as we can here with Stuart. We appreciate you, Stuart, for taking these calls. So please keep your questions brief. Before I go to you, this is one of my favorite callers, Stuart, because I love alliteration. We have Jack from Merrimack. Jack from Merrimack in Wisconsin. Jack, if you can keep your questions short, go ahead, please.
Yeah, to me, the elephant in the room, if you'll pardon the pun, is the fact that there was an attempted political coup as well as a violent coup that took place on January 6th. And there were 84 prominent Republicans who were clearly involved in what was a conspiracy to overturn an election. And not one single so-called leading Republican has even mentioned that fact.
Yep.
And not much less done something like say, we really should have a congressional investigation here. They'd rather investigate Hunter Biden, or say something like, hey, this is illegal. These guys should be prosecuted.
Jack, I appreciate the call. I got to keep it brief. Stuart, give an answer for Jack, please.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think what we have to come to the conclusion is that Trump didn't change the Republican Party. He revealed it. Because there is nothing to stop these people from not supporting Trump.
Right.
And, you know, they're not going to. So one of the really incredibly telling and depressing things is what has happened to those who stood up in the Republican Party, the Liz Cheney, the Adam Kinzinger. They've all, you know, been driven from the party. And what happened to those who led the way to oppose the constitutional process of electing a president, like Marjorie Taylor Greene? She's now the second most powerful person in the House. I don't think that you look at American history, we've ever seen the moral collapse of a party like has happened with the modern Republican Party.
Yeah. Sad, but so true. Let's go to Dick in Madison. Dick, for joy. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. If you keep your question brief, please, for Stuart, go ahead.
Well, real quick, I was just fascinated by that idea you had with favorite son candidates. I think it was an awesome idea. But to all the people that poo-pooed Trump in the beginning in 16, I thought of something Will Rogers said, too. Everything's funny as long as it happens to somebody else.
Yeah.
Good point.
And then all of a sudden, it happened.
Right, right.
And nothing about it was funny.
So true. Dick, thanks for listening. Yeah, I always appreciate it. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that has benefited Trump is the inability to imagine Trump. We couldn't imagine him in the Republican Party being our nominee. I think the country, a lot of the country couldn't imagine him winning, particularly after the Access Hollywood tape. I think Hillary Clinton probably left a lot of votes on the table because people didn't think they needed to vote.
Yep.
Our inability to imagine that a party that lost an election, not particularly close, north of 300 electoral votes, 7.5 million, that they wouldn't just say who won.
Mm-hmm.
And that we really need to think about this, because our inability to imagine what could happen if Trump wins next time is just as great.
Yep.
And that the problem with the unimaginable is it's hard to imagine. And we have to force ourselves to think about that.
So true. Let's go to the northwest part of the state, just about an hour or so away from the Twin Cities, up in beautiful Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Wisconsin's third congressional district, which is going to be a big factor in 2024. Gene in Eau Claire, always appreciate it. If you can keep it brief, Gene, go ahead.
Yes. And hey, you guys are a big factor. I mean, I am so thankful for the radio station, Civic Media, and also I'm very thankful for you, and I'm also extremely thankful to the Lincoln Project. Your ads are fantastic. Your briefs are fantastic. You've been educating the public. I mean, I strongly recommend the Lincoln Project to a lot of people because you say it like it is. I love your ads. I love your serious ads. I love the abuse ads. You get right to the point. You show how harrowing this really is. It's not no joke. And so anyway, keep up the great work. Thank you so much. I'm very grateful for all that you guys are doing. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Gene. Got some fans there,
you know,
Stuart.
As a guy who gets a lot of death threats, I appreciate that so much.
And that's not a joke either. You do get death threats.
You know, one of the things I realized when I started working with the Lincoln Project is how liberating it was not to have a client. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're working for a campaign and you go out and call your opponent a liar in an ad, your candidate better damn well say that, you know, agree with your own ad. Right. We don't have to worry about that. We can put Ivanka Trump and Jared on a billboard in Times Square, and no one says to Joe Biden, how did you let this happen?
Right.
And it gives us a tremendous ability to say it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're an odd political organization, the Lincoln Project, because we have no support from a party or special interest,
right,
which is what most of politics is about. There's only people like that caller that allow us to do this. So we're the ones that are grateful for your support.
About a minute and a half left. Time always goes too fast. But, Stuart, I want to get your take. We have the Republican debate coming up in Milwaukee 2 weeks from today. We will be there. We're coordinating and doing some joint work with the Lincoln Project. We're grateful for that. What do you believe, for people listening across Wisconsin, whether Trump comes to this or not, what is the thing that people should be looking for? What's the takeaway that we can learn from listening to these people in a couple of weeks?
Look, I think the everybody on that stage, as I understand it, is going to have to sign a document saying that they would support the nominee of the party, which is normally just a bland thing, sort of like saying to someone, "I'm, you know, nice to see you," even right, if it's not. But when Donald Trump could be and likely to be the nominee of the party, I think that doesn't become. So Chris, I have two clients, former clients, Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, are in that debate. I would like Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson to say they're not going to support Donald Trump if he's the nominee. And that really is a test. You can't use normalcy. I spent 30 years pointing out flaws in the Democratic Party, and I think the Democratic Party now is the only pro-democracy party in America. That's painful, but I don't know any other honest answer. So this has to be, I think, a moment of honesty. And when people watch this, they ask, the test here is, whatever you're saying is, what does it mean if you're still willing to support Donald Trump as president of the United States? And that's the test, I think.
I think that's so well said. We're going to look forward to, we'd love to have you back, Stuart, as we progress through 2024. Your insight is always great. Again, the book that really hit me was It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump, a guy who was a political machine on the Republican side and now is taking responsibility and doing great work at the Lincoln Project. His forthcoming book called The Conspiracy to End America is available. Please pre-order it at your local bookstore, or Mr. Zomers will put up the information on our website as well. Stuart, we're going to talk about a little bit about football, but time ran out next time. I know you're a big SEC fan.
As I said, I was in my mid-40s, so I realized there were other conferences, and
I still don't
quite understand why there needs to be. But and then we can have a whole conversation about Brett Favre and Green Bay.
We'll do that future. Stuart, thank you so much. Stay tuned on the other side, hour number two of the Todd Lavelle Show. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.